Okay, super. We've got loud and clear from lots of folks. You can stop. Don't worry. We got it covered. Okay, so thank you all. My name is Catherine Matho. I am the application and selection lead for the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program. So that means that you can either thank me or blame me for the application itself. I want to highlight that today we'll be focusing on the essentials of applying, specifically the application itself, like the nuts and bolts of the application system. So we won't, the focus of this webinar will not to be to help you to select an award or prepare your project statement and other materials, but more to actually complete that application form. We hope to answer many of your questions during the webinar, and I'm joined by my colleague, Kate Ullman, who has been answering many of your questions by email, as well as our other colleagues, but Kate and I will be working to answer your questions today and as we lead up to this application deadline, which you all know is Monday, or if you're hearing this archived webinar, still Monday, September 16th will be the application deadline. You can use that chat box as you've been doing, many of you have been doing so far, to answer or to ask any questions. We'll do our best to record those and to answer as many as we can. We are going to try to keep this to an hour, so I may have to talk really fast. I will try not to talk too fast, but if we don't get to your question, feel free to follow up with us afterward to ask any additional questions. We will, as I mentioned, be posting a recording of the webinar on our website for reference in the coming days, and I'm not going to be the one to guarantee when that goes up. I am the messenger. Okay, so moving on, let's talk just a little bit about the U.S. Scholar Program. I'll keep this on the short side. It was established in 1946, as you're likely aware, by a junior senator from Arkansas by the name of J. William Fulbright, with the purpose of promoting mutual understanding between the people of the U.S. and the people of other countries of the world. And for more than 60 years, the Council for International Exchange of Scholars, or CIES, has helped to administer the Fulbright Scholar Program, which is the U.S. government's flagship academic exchange effort on behalf of the United States Department of State and their Bureau of Educational and Cultural Affairs. CIES, today's only Monday, CIES is part of the Institute of International Education, and we have collectively been administering Fulbright with the State Department since program inception. The program is comprised of several kinds of opportunities. Today we'll focus on the application for opportunities to teach and or conduct research in another country, not the U.S. For all applicants, citizenship in the U.S. is required. As you explore the opportunities within the Scholar Program, you'll find other requirements may include holding a doctoral degree, relevant teaching experience, and so on. Before applying, you should carefully read the eligibility requirements for the program and the award to which you apply to ensure that you're eligible. So what is the... So we wanted to highlight relative to program mission or our diversity and inclusion. So I wanted to highlight this aspect of our program mission, and we do want that our applicants and our selectees, our grantees, reflect the diversity of U.S. scholars and professionals here in the U.S. as they go abroad, and we see that in our application pool, we see that in our grantees, and we also see that in those who are reviewing our applications. We wanted to highlight this, that we do seek applicants from traditionally underrepresented audiences. Okay, so eligibility, a little bit more detail. Actually, I think we can jump to the next slide because we've talked about this. We're going to skip kind of this slide. It's about selecting the right award because you are well on your way on this as you work on the application, and we want to focus on the application itself. So the process. So we have an application form, and you as the applicant come up with a project idea, which goes into that project statement. And you also decide on the location for it. Now, it may be, you know, that the location comes before you have the idea or vice versa, and that's, there's no wrong direction in that. The key is to have a cogent project in your project statement presented there clearly, concisely, and within 3 to 5 pages for your application package. So you'll refine that, you'll present the project plan and the application, and then your application will go through the review process. And we'll talk a little bit more about that later on. So the components of the application, before we jump into the application itself, there's a project statement. We have lots of guidelines on all of these, so we're not going to be focusing a lot on the content of these because we have had other webinars where we discuss these in greater detail, such as the formatting and whether footnotes are required. They're not. The format is up to you. We just ask that you pick one format for citations and be consistent. But aside from those pieces, I mean, it's really, there's guidelines in on our website for each of these components, and we encourage you to refer to them. We're not super prescriptive in terms of the format, you know, whether and the project statement has lots of bullets or whether it can have pictures, because it really depends on you as the applicant and the nature of your project and what you're proposing and your style in terms of how you want to present that, that we don't have a set format for you to go with on those. So in terms of the other components of the application, we have a bibliography or syllabi, depending on whether you're applying for teaching or research or both. You would need both. If you're applying for teaching and research combined. An invitation letter, whether one is needed or not, would be specified in the award description. And the language proficiency report would depend on where you're applying to and what you're applying to do. Finally, if you are in the arts, architecture, creative writing, journalism, or film, you may need to include a portfolio in your application. This was previously known as the supplemental materials, and we have incorporated that right into the application, which I'm delighted about. So you'll be able to upload that right in your application. Okay, so let's keep going. Okay, so let's actually jump over to the application itself. We have a link here. To get to that link to the application, if you start on the awards catalog, you can start there. You certainly found out about Fulbright if you're on this webinar, so you have a good sense of how to navigate to either the CIES website or you can go to the catalog of awards, and we're going to jump over there. So if Kate opens up awards.cis.org in a new tab. We've got the Kate and Catherine show, I just realized this. Okay, so let's pick an award. Any award will do for this example. You can search all awards. We're not going to pick all of them. You can only apply to one award per year. You can't apply to multiple. We do make you decide. So you can click on that blue Apply Now button, and that will take you back to the CIES website, where you'll have the application page. This tab has all the materials. It has the link to the application itself. And we've already created an application for you, but you can also see that there's a link to a PDF with instructions. And you can open that, and you can download that, and you can have it sitting right beside you as you're completing the application. In some ways, it's a written-out version of what we'll be going through today to walk you through the application. So we've got lots of resources for you, so if you are working on this and have any questions, this is a great place to start. And it's searchable and will hopefully help to answer many of your questions. Not that we don't want you to stick around for this webinar, of course, but to know that it's here for you as an additional resource. And actually, at the bottom of this application page, you'll see in the blue box all the way at the bottom, it says Application Instructions and U.S. Scholar Program. And that is hyperlinked where it says U.S. Scholar Program, so you can click on that and also get to those instructions. Or it will take you to the CIS webpage where those are available. So again, you've got lots of ways to getting to the same information. So we have gone ahead and created an application, and to do that, you will initially you'll create an account, you'll receive an email, there will be some confirmation steps, and then you'll land on this welcome page, which welcomes you to the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program application. You'll want to read this page, as well as the links at the top of the page, especially about the program and the walkthrough guide, which we're going through kind of virtually today. And then you can go ahead and proceed on that preliminary questions page. At the bottom of each page, you'll see a continue button, and we strongly recommend that you use that continue button. You can jump around in the sections, but we have found that it's best if you use that continue button for some of the questions, because some of the pieces are sequential, that it's important for the logic behind them to know which award, for example, you have selected in order to present some of the right options for you later on. So these first questions are asking you, you know, the first two are about our basic program eligibility. So if you've had a Fulbright scholar grant in the past 2 years, and if you're a U.S. citizen. Assuming you can go ahead and continue on, then we ask what program you're applying to, and then whether you're choosing an award that allows you to go to one country or to go to multiple countries. We do have a handful of awards that are considered multi-country awards, but you can actually just go to one country on them. Our Africa Regional Research Program, for example, allows you to go to one country in sub-Saharan Africa, but it does allow for multiple countries, so you may get to this page and see the selected country and award, and if it's not there, go back a page, switch your option, and then proceed on to the next page, and you should see the right option. So continuing on, we have the award details page, and this will now pop up with a question about what country you want to go to and then what corresponding award you want to select. If you have selected a multi-country award, you would have additional boxes where you would indicate which countries or country you are applying to go to. So for example, that Africa Regional Research Program, it may be that you are applying to go to Senegal, or maybe you are applying to go to Senegal and Cote d'Ivoire. And there would be a place for you to enter that information. There's also a link directly to the award in here, so you have that for easy reference as well as some summary information. So if we go ahead and click continue on this page, go ahead, King.
I do want to just interject that when you're choosing your award, even if there's only one award offered for that country, you do have to save your choice. If you don't click save, the program won't register that you are applying to an award, and it won't populate the rest of the application for you.
Yes, answer all questions completely. Thanks, Kate. That's definitely an important aspect. Okay, so the application, if you have applied previously, you may notice that it's organized a little bit differently. So we have our personal information up first here in terms of the questions that are being asked. Most of it should be fairly self-explanatory. Actually, Kate, if you can scroll down just a smidge. If you're trying to look at the questions that are being received as well as running the application here. So I thanks for doing like 18 things at once. Most of this should be fairly self-explanatory. We ask you about citizenship information here. If you have dual citizenship, that's usually fine. There are a handful of awards where you can't have dual citizenship with that country. So if you were applying to go to Australia, for example, you couldn't also be a dual citizen with Australia. We ask some additional information here about prior experience. And I think from here, actually, we can continue. Just in time for Kate to jump back. Great. Okay, so this is your contact information. We have a new feature where you can have your permanent address, and then if you're not residing there currently, you can indicate your current mailing address, and this is a pretty handy feature. The reason the country appears first is so that it can then adjust the additional boxes here depending on where you are. So if it's in the U.S., it'll populate with the states. If it's in France, that you're currently residing, then you would be able to select the appropriate province there and enter the additional information there. Your telephone numbers, please list those and continue on through this page. Emergency contact information, we hope that this would be someone who could be contacted if you were to be selected for a grant while you were on your grant, so maybe not someone who you would accompany. Or who would accompany you, rather, on the grant, but someone who would be possibly not with you while there. I love that email address. This is not my email. We've done used this account for some testing of our application, and it's great to see some of the questions are already populated for you to see some examples, in some cases, of what not to do. So here we have your academic and professional information. This would be about your current title and your current employer. if you have more than one institution or employer, then we would encourage you to list one here and have all of your information in your CV or your resume so that the reviewers, all of those who are reviewing your application later in the process, have a good sense of the bigger picture in terms of your experience and your expertise and what you bring to your project. Here you'll upload your CV or resume. The application does recognize how many pages are in a particular document, so it will check to make sure that your documents are the correct length. However, it won't check to make sure it's the correct document. So if in the CV section you accidentally upload your bibliography or your project statement, it won't check for that. So we encourage you to use that preview option to make sure it's the right item that's being uploaded. That happens occasionally, we understand that, but that gives you a way to just double check that before you hit submit, and gives you a little bit less to worry about after you submit. Okay, so moving on.
Just another note about the uploading your resume. This is one of those reasons where you have to make sure you go back and you save your the choice for the award that you are selecting, because if you have not yet chosen your award, you will not be able to upload your resume. So like Catherine said at the beginning, it's important to kind of start at the top and work your way through the application rather than jumping around, because some of these fields won't populate if you haven't answered the previous questions. Great. Also, just to address a couple questions that have been coming up in the questions box, a lot of you have been asking what time the deadline is on September 16th. Please submit your applications by 11:59 p.m. Pacific time. Another question that we're seeing a lot is how many letters of recommendation are you allowed to submit? And the answer to that is you are only able to submit 3 letters of recommendation.
If you submit more, we will email you after to have you choose one to be removed. Or however, if you have 2 extras, then we'll ask you to, you know, which ones without being able to see them. And we aren't able to tell you which ones either. So it'll be kind of a blind, you've got 5, pick 3 that you want to keep kind of situation. So we encourage you to be mindful of that limit. You can monitor the submission of your recommendations outside the application. Like if you can go ahead and submit today if you wanted to. If your recommendations haven't been received, that's fine. You can still log in to monitor those recommendations and their status. You can send reminders still, and you can even, you know, if somebody hasn't submitted their recommendation on Friday even, you could swap them out. Like you could exclude them and then you would be able to add someone else to replace them. So for instance, you realize or they let you know that I'm not going to be able to do this after all, that gives you the ability to manage that afterwards. So you don't have to wait until you get all of your recommendations to submit that application. Just in case that's what was holding you up in terms of submission. You'll also note that some of these questions have asterisks next to them, and those mean that they're required questions. And that's pretty much all of them in the application, in case you were wondering. You will note that, you know, there are certain sections that it will remind you at the very end that you need to go back and fix this, or not so much fix this, but, you know, address this or finish that piece of the application. So you'll also note that there are text boxes that have character limits on them, and they'll show you how many characters are remaining. And these include spaces and punctuation. So it may be the kind of thing that you want to work on it in a Word document and monitor that and then copy it in, or you can work on it right here and it'll let you know how close you are to that limit. The awarded degrees, this is where your educational background is entered. So it will be in your CV, but it will also be here. So you're able to open this up. If you start typing an institution, say Stony Brook, you'll note that there are options that pop up. In this case, there aren't too many other Stony Brooks or cities by the name of the Stony Brook for it to choose from, so you'll be able to search that pretty easily. On the other hand, if you were to type in New York for like New York University, then you would all of a sudden see a lot of options. So then you might need to type out the full name or scroll through that list. But it is a responsive list, And it's also a very search-friendly list. It does require that we spell correctly, though, in that. So I'm not picking on Kate if he's happening to mistype as I'm saying it. It's like perfect timing. But occasionally, you know, we can't find an institution because we forgot, you know, a letter or something. We type fast or aren't paying close attention. So you will want to make sure that that institution is listed here. And then all of the all the corresponding information is completed, and then go ahead and hit save when that's entered. In this case, we did not complete the form, and it has reminded us that it needs this additional information. So, Kate, if you want to hit cancel, that's fine. If you have a degree in progress, like say you're working on your PhD or another degree, go ahead and list that in here and just enter the date that you expect that it will be conferred. It will ask you if you're a postdoctoral applicant, will ask you for your five most significant professional accomplishments, and will also ask you for your experience abroad. So the reason for the experience abroad piece is that there is a program policy about residents abroad. So if you have resided abroad for five or more consecutive years in the six-year period preceding the date of the application, your application would be ineligible. So in this case, a period of 9 months or more during a calendar year is considered to constitute a full year abroad. This isn't usually a major concern for most applicants, but if you do have questions about this, feel free to reach out to us for clarification. But oftentimes, it's really just sitting down and thinking about, you know, the past 6 years and writing them out almost in like a table form to figure out the eligibility. So there's a box where you add that information just like you do for the degrees. And then we ask the same thing for prior Fulbright grants. So if you've had a Fulbright previously, you'll be asked to provide more information about it. If it was a scholar grant, then you'll be asked to provide a justification for that prior grant as to why you are proposing another and how that project will, how the proposed project will build upon your prior experience. We pulled that out of the application, the project statement this year, and made it a separate question. So if you're not recognizing that, if you've applied previously, that is a change that we made this year. So moving on to the project details, the discipline of the project, this is one of those questions where the application is looking for your response to one question before it will show you other pieces. So if you are in the arts, so say you were in, so what's Kate going to choose? I don't know, I can't predict. Okay, so industrial arts, super. So say you're in industrial arts and you have chosen, this is your, the project, the discipline of your project, rather. When you select this, the page with a portfolio will later be added as a page in the application where you can upload portfolio materials. Now, you don't necessarily have to, so you'll indicate whether or not you will submit a portfolio. If you choose not to, you will be asked why. There are often good reasons for not including why. Maybe it isn't so much that you are going to be, say you're in painting, you know, say you're a painter and you're not going to be actually painting, but maybe you are working on a history of painting, so it isn't so much the production of the materials, but more like the critical analysis of the materials, that kind of thing, is a reason why you wouldn't include those materials.
And the opposite is also true. If your PhD or other terminal degree is in, say, the sciences, but the project that you are working on is in the arts, you would still select the arts as your academic discipline, and you can use that other specializations box to talk about how it relates to your degree in the sciences. But if you're pursuing a project in the arts, we would expect you to submit a portfolio.
And I will say the other specializations, I would probably I would use the project statement to really connect how you are prepared for what you're proposing to do. So, for example, we have, like if you were a practicing lawyer, but you were presenting a project in creative writing, you would use your project statement to really demonstrate your expertise in creative writing and your CV to further supplement and demonstrate that. Or the other specializations that may be here that you would indicate that it's, you know, nonfiction writing, prose, poetry, that kind of thing, that you could help to explain that a little bit further. But I wouldn't go into great detail in that other specializations box. It's going to have a limit on that. And actually we did have a grantee who was a practicing lawyer who went abroad on her grant to write a book that was, I think it was creative fiction for her project. So it is possible to be in one discipline and have your project be in another and be selected. The key is to demonstrate that that ability to both do what you propose to do and see it through. Okay, so getting into the real nitty-gritty of the application. So when we chose an award back on that award details page, that then links to this project details page where it's limiting us to the options available for the grant activity. So whether in this case the award can either be for research or a combination of teaching research. So it doesn't allow you to make up your own options for this. So if it didn't allow for teaching only, you can't make it teaching only. So you would choose that, and then that will further allow you to, it will further show the sections for the corresponding materials to be uploaded. You'll also enter your intended grant period here, so the start date and the length and the number of flex segments. Something that we encountered this morning actually was an applicant had an issue where the flex piece wasn't appearing, and it should have been, so we went back to that award details page and hit save on those options, and then they appeared correctly. So Kate wasn't kidding around when she said that it is important to make sure that those pieces are saved because they do have implications further into the application. Okay, so then we've entered that information. You'll definitely want to cross-reference the award description for those pieces to make sure that you have a grant start date that's within the right year and within the right time frame for that award. They do vary enormously, so please read carefully from award to award. They can change. Even within the award, depending on the length, the grant start date might change and so on. And same with the number of flex segments if that has been selected. I won't detail flex because it's described here, and we also have more descriptions about it in the award descriptions. So I'll move on to the project title. This is what your project is about. And it should be a description of what you're planning on doing, so it shouldn't just be like teaching in Albania. It should be a little bit more descriptive. I'm sure that you can come up with something that's more exciting and interesting than that. You'll want to include an abstract or a summary of your project here. Again, we have a character limit on this. And then if you need a host institution, this next section would be where you would upload the institution information, and then further down the page is where you would upload the invitation letter. So we have the project statement added here, we have the syllabi added here, and we also have the bibliography added here because Kate selected a teaching and research award for us to apply to. So these sections, so if she switches to research, then all of a sudden the syllabi section disappeared. Where'd it go, Kate? Oh, no. Okay, so if we add the teaching and research back, naturally that will appear again. So you will want to pay attention to which one you're selecting because that, again, will have implications. You can also upload files. You will only ultimately be able to upload, or only one will actually be accepted. So if you have multiple here, I would delete out the one that is not relevant, but use that preview feature, again, to make sure that you've uploaded the right documents here. These do have page limits, and we also have links to the requirements for these documents that will go back to our website so you can read more about what needs to go into them in terms of the content. The information here is more about the formatting of the document, and that will be on the other page as well. But we recommend just cross-referencing and making sure that you have all your ducks in a row before you submit. Lets everybody sleep better at night, including us on this end. Knowing that you've done that right helps further in the process. Kate. Yes, Kate reminded me that the Latin alphabet characters, you'll want to be mindful of that. So using the Adobe PDF format is usually your safest bet if you have any non-English or non-Latin characters. which we do see occasionally. We also see lots of math formulas and other characters and symbols and all kinds of fun stuff. So Adobe PDF is going to be your best bet in terms of a file format to be uploaded. It retains formatting the best, and it's usually the fastest to be uploaded. Does that cover it? Okay, I'm getting my instructions. Thumbs up. I can do that. It's only Monday. Our audience is thinking these people have lost their minds. Close, very close. So the invitation letter we talked about is associated with that hosting institution. In the award description, there would be information about whether an invitation letter is required or not. This is where you would upload that letter. So there are awards that have an invitation letter that's required. There are awards that say, do not seek an invitation letter. And there are awards that are everywhere in between. If you are applying for an award that doesn't want an invitation letter, please don't add an invitation letter here. There's usually a good reason for not wanting one. Sometimes that's explained in the award description, and sometimes it's not. Oftentimes, it usually means that there's a good amount of communication within the host country about the placement and to make sure that your expertise and skills would be are going to be best placed and best used in an institution. So just read carefully on that. If it's not required, it's not required. So it wouldn't be a disqualifier if you don't have that invitation letter. And I'll not say anything further about the invitation letter because that's going to open a big can of questions. And we have, I'm sure, lots of webinars that have talked about invitation letters. Keep shaking your head vigorously. Okay, alternate countries and awards. So many applicants will ask, okay, so can I apply to multiple awards? No. Can I be considered for multiple awards? No. So why do you ask this question? Well, occasionally in the review process, there may be cause to be considered for an alternate country or award. It's really done really infrequently. Emphasis on the really. It's much more of a rare instance when this happens. So it's a helpful question. It's, you know, a question that I would, you know, recommend thinking about but not spending a lot of time on. That you can enter other countries, you can enter other awards here, but I would absolutely still focus your application and all the materials on that award in that country that you most want to go to and have focused for your application to really keep them all very tailored to that one award, where this additional section kind of gives you the opportunity to indicate other interests.
We're getting some questions about how to address previous scholar grants and how to mention it in the app. So we did go over that piece of the application where you would include any further justification for why you're seeking another Fulbright scholar grant.
I would say that you can also incorporate that into your project statement, but it's really up to you as to how you want to address that. I would just make sure that it's, you know, with all of the documents, I would make sure that it's clear to someone else who is reading it that they're not trying to connect the dots for you. Oftentimes, I feel like when we try to have someone else connect those dots, they connect them in a different way, and the ending picture is different, and the conclusion that they come to might not be the one that we want them to come to. So to make that clear, it's really up to the applicant. We see, you know, project statements that have headers where they address the different aspects or different guidelines for the project statement. We see others that incorporate it in a lot more kind of a different flow. But it really is up to the applicant as to how they do that. We just ask that you do it because that helps the reviewers and those further down the review process to understand what it is that came out of your prior grant or grants and then what you expect to come out of the future one in terms of those results and that the other pieces. And the review criteria also on our website can be helpful in thinking about that. Kind of a long answer.
We're also getting some questions about interdisciplinary projects and how which disciplines you should select. I do want to say that we do have an option here for
interdisciplinary studies. If you are pursuing an interdisciplinary project and one aspect of it is art-based, I encourage you to choose whichever arts-based discipline is associated with your project, because if you don't, then the portfolio will not populate. So if you're doing an interdisciplinary project, do choose the arts discipline or whatever appropriate artistic discipline for your primary, so that you are able to upload your portfolio.
Yeah, that's a really important point. And I would say, you know, otherwise, it's really up to you as to which you list, but you can use that other specialization to list the other one, and that will help tremendously in terms of the review of the application and thinking about which discipline is it most, which is the most closely linked discipline. And we have linked an index searchable list, so if you're looking at all of the disciplines and saying, okay, which one is mine, it's a really long list, I don't want to search through this entire list and miss mine or pick the wrong one, you can use that searchable list. I believe it's a PDF, and you can do a keyword search on there so you can see all of the different options, because it may be that your specialization falls under a discipline that you might not have exactly expected. It is what it is. But the searchability of that list can be really helpful. Okay, so we continue on in our application, and we do generally speaking recommend using Chrome, but this should work in all browsers. I don't know that we've heard of any people having issues in other browsers, but I think Chrome seems to be the one that it works best on. Okay, so I've already forgotten which award that we applied to, in which country. So I'm going to change. Yeah, okay, so France, perfect. So say you're a native speaker of French and you might need it for your project, then you can indicate that here. If you're not a native speaker, you would want to look at the award description to see if you need to have the language proficiency evaluation. And in fact, actually, even if you are a native speaker, there are some awards, and there's a handful of awards where you would still need to have some sort of evaluation. So the evaluation is in two parts. There's a self-evaluation, which is here on this page, where you would indicate your skills and your experience and everything here for that language or those languages, and you can enter, I think, up to three. So there's a drop box, or a drop-down rather, at the top, where you can enter like a number of languages. So it may be that you have two or three, and you can enter those there. So if you were applying to France, we would expect you to probably have French, but you may also speak Spanish or another language, and you can enter those here. If you are applying to go on a multi-country grant, so maybe you were applying to go to Senegal and Bulgaria, that'd be a fun combination, right? then you may need to indicate that you have French and Bulgarian language here. It may be that you're applying, that the project that you're doing can largely be completed in English. So this is one of those questions where I don't have an exact answer for you, and Kate and our colleagues won't necessarily have an exact answer for you, because so much of it depends on what you're planning to do and where you're planning to go. So you will just have to read carefully and let us know if you have questions, that we can help to sort that out. This is where you fill out that information. And that award description usually has more information if there's any specific requirements. Brazil comes to mind, and Chile comes to mind, Morocco comes to mind, but many it's really dependent on the project.
Yeah, that's true. It's also, I want to point out that the language proficiency is not required. This is assuming that you're doing your work in English. So even if English is not your first language, but you are fluent in English and your grant activity can all be completed in English, and there's no language skills required other than English, please select a language proficiency is not required. So we are assuming English as the base language for this application.
Yeah, perfect. Thank you. Because occasionally we'll get asked if we if an applicant needs to complete this for English, and the answer to that is no. Okay, so I said that there were two parts to the language proficiency report. So we've done the self-evaluation, and there's also a formal evaluation, and that is part of the recommendations and language evaluator registration. So this is where the question came in earlier about recommendations and how many recommendations. So at the top of the page, you'll see some more instructions about how many recommenders. So there's three recommenders, and if you have that language proficiency, that external evaluation, if that's necessary, you can have up to two evaluators for that. So if you were applying again for that regional research grant in sub-Saharan Africa for Senegal and Côte d'Ivoire, you may have it for French, but you might not have it. You might not need a second one. On the other hand, you might need a second one for a local language for the particular project that you're proposing. You'll register those folks here. So I don't think that we've already got the MACs registered here. So you can see what this looks like. And you can exclude them if they're not going to be able to submit that recommendation after all. And then you would be able to add someone in their stead.
Yeah. So also to point out,
whether you're sending them a letter of recommendation or a language evaluation, is this a choice up here. I do want to note that these are two separate forms.
So you can, if you...
It matters which one you choose.
Right. So if you accidentally send a language evaluation form to your recommender or a recommender form to your language evaluator, you will have to exclude that that person. You would have to edit them and exclude them and then add them a second time. If you switch it over here just without excluding them first, the system doesn't send them a new link to the correct form. So if you do make a mistake with this, please exclude them and then add a new evaluator or a new recommender and put their information in a second time. The same is true if you want to change whether or not you waive your access to the recommendation. You can't edit that after you've already sent them the evaluation or the recommendation, so you would have to exclude them, and then when you add your new you can add the same person over again, and when you add them the second time, you can select whatever the other option.
And this means that if they also make a mistake in that the easiest way to fix that is to contact us, and then you can exclude them. I think we would exclude them, and then you would be able to re-add them. But there's no easy way for us just to move a letter to like the other form. That this would have to go back to your recommender or your evaluator to have them re-upload their letter. So just to be doubly sure when you're adding the person that you're adding them as the right letter type, that will make things easier as you proceed. Speaking of proceeding, shall we? Okay, so as you may recall, a few pages ago, we selected our project, I think, was in dance. So we have uploaded some materials here to support our portfolio. As you can see, there's a variety of kinds of materials. We do ask that you pay attention to the limits and the guidelines that we have posted on our website, but you can also see that it's built right into the application, so you can preview your items, see how long they are, upload different items, and manage all of that right here. So it should be fairly easy, I think, to be able to upload this. I would pay attention to the file types. There's a wide variety of file types, but that is something that you will probably, if you're in the field, you will know more about than we do. So I would use your best judgment in terms of the file types and what will work best for your materials.
Also, please don't include any links in your portfolios. You should not have to click on anything. It should,
whatever it is that you want us to see should be what you upload.
Yeah, the application needs to be a package deal with no outside boxes. Okay.
So
So we are getting close to the end, everyone, both in time and material. Okay, so depending on the country that you're applying to, we will have a data privacy and request for consent. So if you're applying to a country in the EU, you'll see additional information related to the general data protection regulation, or GDPR, as you may know it in friendly DC acronym speak. And then if you're not applying to a country in the EU, then this page would be shorter. It's just the nature of the work and the countries and the program. So assuming you consent, you would go ahead and continue and move on to the certification page. So this is where you certify that what is in your application, that you produced it, that it is accurate and true and not misrepresenting anything, and that it's complete to the best of your knowledge, and that if anything is not any of those, then the Fulbright program would have, that the Fulbright program would have the ability to go back and revise. And it could be a revision of the outcome, it could impact the terms of the grant, and so on. So read carefully, sign, and continue. And signing just means typing your name, and like you don't have to upload, there's no place to upload like a JPEG of your signature line. So we did miss some spots in the application, and this review page has let us know where. I want to highlight that this page will alert you to which page something is missing, but it won't necessarily go back to that exact section. So in this case, the project details, it said that you're only allowed to submit one bibliography. Look it, it was counting, and it was counting on us to check that before we submitted, and it caught it for us. So in that case, we would delete one of those bibliography documents, we would preview them to make sure that we got the right one before deleting it, and then we could go ahead and delete it. The other thing is the invitation letter. If an invitation letter is not present in your application, in this case we have more than one, you can upload more than one. If one is not present in your application, regardless of whether or not it's required, the application will ask if you will be submitting a letter of invitation. And it's more of a, we just want to bring this to your attention that it may be missing. So if you don't have one and you're not going to get one or it's not required or you shouldn't submit it, don't worry. I mean, read it. Read the message that pops up. It should say that you're able to, you should be able to proceed in submitting the application without the invitation. Now, we do have some awards in the catalog of awards. France is a good example of this, as well as another of other countries, partner countries, where it's a partner award, so it might be, for example, there might be an award in the Aquitaine region in France, and there might be a host institution in the award name. And so applicants may wonder, well, do I need to indicate that host institution in this section of the application? And you should. I think it's good practice because it helps us to ensure that you are applying to the right award. If by chance, you know, for the UK, they have a lot of awards that are very specific to institutions. So if you were applying to award at Cambridge, but you listed Nottingham in the institution, we may go back and say, hey, this doesn't match. Which is it? Because we can, you know, we can change one or the other. But it would be best if that information were consistent to start with, and that's an easy way to make sure. So yeah, I would fill that in regardless. So that review page is really there to help you make sure that everything is complete. Again, it won't check to make sure that the content has the right answers in it. We can't guarantee that. So we, you know, encourage you to use that application proof and to check through it before you submit your application. You can also save that for reference afterward. If you're having any questions about Slate and using the application after the webinar, Kate, do you have any suggestions? In terms of, if people are having, questions about how to use the application or something isn't quite working right.
Yeah, you can reach out to scholars@iie.org, and you can also message the regional inbox
the email that is listed on the awards catalog. We'll be happy to address any questions that come up with the application system.
Okay, should we jump over to the PowerPoint or jump back to that? I think there were a couple more slides that we wanted to talk through. Okay, so I promised at the beginning that we would talk through the review process and the timeline, so what happens after you submit your application. Hey, we're getting to that time. So after you submit the application, our team here will conduct a technical review of your application for completeness and eligibility. Then it will undergo our peer review process, which is comprised of committees organized by discipline who are reviewing all of the applications. So that is going to be happening later this fall, and I am furiously trying to get all of that in order for all of our applications. I'm excited about that. It's a big piece of my job, as well as the review of the applications in that technical review. And then we'll notify applicants following that peer review process of the outcome of the peer review, whether your application has been recommended for further consideration or not. Those applications that are recommended are then reviewed by the J. William Fulbright Foreign Scholarship Board, as well as our partner countries. So in this case, our application was for France, so we would be our partners in France, as well as those at the U.S. Department of State. Now, that means that November to January, that January to April process of reviewing all the applications, I would actually say that probably more typically extends into May, depending on the country. If I had a way to predict exactly which country would be when. Lottery tickets, right, Dean? you get a lottery ticket. You get a lot of like I said, the application deadline is approaching. So that means that we need to have decisions from multiple directions in order to notify you of the final outcome of your application, whether you've been selected, whether it's been not selected, or whether it's an alternate outcome. So we do need to have all of those outcomes before we can make that final notification. And then onward from that, it's preparing for your grant. So we do want to remind you that peer review process is a vital part of our review process, and that applications do need to go through the peer review process and be recommended in order to be considered for the host country. So taking a look at the review criteria and keeping that in mind while you make these final preparations before submitting is probably a good step to take before you hit submit. But I think that pretty well takes us through the presentation. So in the screen you see here, you have some resources. If you're still awake, you know, please feel free to keep asking questions. My colleagues and I have been trying to answer in the questions module and in the discussion as well. But let's see, we have a few more minutes where we can answer questions. We'll get started.
Yeah, so we're getting a lot of questions about when the letters of recommendation and the letters of invitation should be submitted. You should have all of your application materials submitted by the deadline. Please have everything in by September 16th.
While you can submit your application before your recommenders submit their recommendations, I do want to emphasize that your recommendations should also be in by September 16th. We want your complete application, everything completed, by our deadline.
On or before?
Both.
Yeah, it could be before. We're happy to see it earlier. Okay, so I know a lot of questions are coming in about some of the contents of the materials, and again, I want to redirect you to the pages on our website with more of that information. We've gotten some questions that are in some ways probably better suited to individual conversations about some of the application questions, such as partners and dependents and that kind of thing, and it may be best to take those offline. So if you want to contact us, we're happy to take those questions. In terms of the letters of recommendation and where they need to be sent, so the system itself, and that's a good question because we didn't exactly address that. When you add or register a recommender or add a register and a language evaluator, that person is sent an email. to upload their recommendations or their evaluation directly to the application. And that way it will be connected automatically to your application. So you shouldn't be like collecting it from them and then uploading it for them in the application. There's actually not a place for you to do that. So you may want to guide them to check their junk mail or check their spam folder in case the email was sent there. But our general best practice is to recommend that you put in a note. There's a spot actually in that section now. So you can say, you know, dear Professor Smith, I'm asking for your recommendation for this application. I'll, you know, follow up with you separately to provide my project statement so you can take a look at it beforehand, before you submit, that you're able to do that. And that way you can give them a heads up that you are submitting that, and then they can confirm that or let you know if they haven't received that email. I'm trying to read and talk at the same time, and it's not working.
In regards to if you need to choose more than one if you have dual citizenship, you should list the United States in that first box. I mean, regardless, you should list the United States in that first box first. And then in that scrolling box, you can select more than one by holding the control key if you need to.
Just to address some more specific technical questions that are coming up.
Okay, so if you have multiple invitation letters, so say you are applying for one of these regional awards, is it possible to upload those invitation letters to your application? Yes. In the previous application, you had to upload them as one single big file. And in the current application, you are able to upload those separately. So if you receive one, and then a few days later you receive the second one, you can upload those separately, that they can be added separately. It's the only section of the application where you can upload multiple documents to the application. The references, great question. So references and citations. So those don't need to be in the project statement. Your bibliography will more than likely have those same items or those references or citations in them. If there are any that wouldn't be in the bibliography, you're more than welcome to use your best judgment and decision to include them in the project statement. Sorry, we had a question saying to clarify something, and it didn't specify what we needed to clarify. So I apologize for being vague myself, but we're not sure what needs clarification. Okay, so a question came in about the syllabi and course outline. So it depends a little bit on what you're proposing to do. So you would need to think about what it is that you're proposing and to demonstrate. Basically, the syllabi and course outlines are there for two reasons. One is to demonstrate your expertise and your preparation for teaching, and the other piece is to demonstrate what you may be teaching in that particular project. Now, we realize that some awards are more seminar style in terms of the expectations, or they may want you to do some guest lectures where it's much more of a course outline, and that's fine as well. That we have guidance, but again, it's meant to be a little bit more flexible because the nature of the awards varies so much. Where in some locations it would be a course of your own design, in some places it would be more a course that someone has taught before and that you would be teaching or maybe perhaps teaching with them. In terms of what countries do or do not participate in programs, I don't have a good answer in many cases as to why. Aside from that is, for right now, the way that the award is structured. In some cases, it's because of the nature of the program. For instance, there are countries that we have better diplomatic relations with than others, and that can influence the locations as well. Okay, so thank you, Kate. She looked at me and she said, we're at 3, so I want to be cognizant of your time as well in this presentation. So we still have a whole lot of questions coming in, but we are just about out of time. So I think we can take maybe one or two more, and then we will do our best to help answer your questions that come in by email afterwards.
Yeah, absolutely. And also,
for every award, we do have a email and contact listed in that award description. So if you have any questions
about the awards or about the application process, please reach out to the program staff listed in the award description.
And so the awards, the award catalog has contact information in each of the awards. So if you were applying to, say, India, that contact email would be South and Central Asia, or South Central Asia, rather, at IIE.org. And our main email address is scholars@IIE.org. Second to last question is, do we have to have a letter of recommendation for every award? Yes. So if you are applying, then you need to have three letters of recommendation. If you have to have a language evaluation, that depends on the award. You can only apply to one award. So it may be that you are applying to an award where you need to have multiple languages or proficiency in multiple languages. So you would need to have, you may need to have evaluations for each of those languages. Kate, I think our final question. What time again is the deadline for the application?
The deadline for the application is September 16th at 11:59 Pacific time. So you do have that full, the entire United States day of
September 16th.
Well, continental United States day
to submit your application.
Okay, thank you all for joining this sprint of a session here through the application. So we appreciate your time and your attention this afternoon. And if something isn't clear in the award, please feel free to reach out. But we wish you all the best in these final days leading up to the application deadline and in your application. And again, this will be recorded, so you'll be able to listen to all of this again if you need a way to put yourself to sleep another night. Take care, everyone.